good to be with you this evening. I enjoyed my ride over today looking at the cornfields and soybeans and coming out over this way across the state of Illinois to be with you good people. As Forrest has already said, my name is Art Adams, and I've been preaching the gospel for a long, long time. I was telling Brother Reeves, his brother Tim worked with me coming a preacher apprenticeship program there in Portage when I was there. So it's so good to see you all and to see some faces that I know and some people that I don't know. I've been told it's okay to leave my coat on the front row. So if anyone's offended, raise your hand. I'll put my coat on. But otherwise, I find it refreshing that I can kind of move around except for the headgear. I look forward to being with you this weekend. This particular series is one that addresses mental health issues and some of the things that we see in our congregations. The my credentials basically are up here in front of you. I work first and foremost. I'm a gospel preacher, and during the week I work in a mental health facility. I work on both ends of town. I work with serving the homeless in Indianapolis, and I'm the director there of the social services. And I work with basically helping homeless people to overcome the problems that got them on the street so they can stay housed. Among that also is a specialty program for veterans where I work with some specific issues that deal with veterans and some of their dilemmas. I also work with the rich and famous. And by that, I literally mean the rich and famous, some names that you would know. And I work with their families up in the north end of Indianapolis for 20 hours a week. And there I run a family program for an addiction, drug and alcohol addiction, long-term treatment. By long-term, I'm talking anywhere from 6 to 9 months of people that are trying to overcome the problem. So whether they're rich and famous or whether they are poor and homeless, the issues are very similar. And in my free time, when I'm not preaching and doing those things, I have a private practice where I work with people that come to see me for mental health and addiction issues. I've been doing this kind of work for a long time, and I actually was preaching full-time for about 17 years. And I began asking a question when I looked out over the audience that I was preaching to, is where is the joy? And what's going on in the lives of our people that that people come in and we talk about a peace that passes understanding, and yet I'm seeing very troubled people sometimes. And I ask the question, how can this be? And I also ask, what is creating it? Are we attracting people that have these kinds of issues? People come from the highways and the hedges, and they come with all kinds of life's issues. Or are we, in fact, maybe creating some of this with pathology from the pulpit? And so I asked that question. It caused me to struggle just a little bit. And along about that time came a guy that opened up what he called a Christian counseling center, and he didn't know much about the Bible. And so he asked me if I would join him in his business, which I did. And one thing led to another, and ultimately this is where I am tonight. I present lessons similar to this to various congregations around the country. This year, I believe I have 8 that are scheduled, 3 more after this. And this basically, as we look at our brethren, I'm seeing quite a epidemic that is going on among our brethren in terms of some of the mental health issues, but even more so the addiction issues. Where we have a pornography epidemic going on amongst our brethren, hitting about 1 out of every 4 of our males and 1 out of every 5 of our females. That's kind of the numbers after several years of doing this that I'm coming up with. That's what it looks like it's shaking out to. And we also have the food addictions. We have the gambling addictions. Relationship addictions, among other kinds of things. So what I did is I was asked by someone along the way after I presented at one of the Brotherhood lectures, I was asked to come to a congregation and to talk on these issues And what started as one lesson has ended up with multiple series of lessons, part of which you will get this weekend. Tonight I've been asked to speak on a variety of topics, or on the first of a variety of topics. And this one, we're going to talk about the Christian and mental illness. Now, obviously, in the Bible, the word mental illness does not occur, but the word madness does. The word madness, we'll look at a verse that talks about that. We read about those that are feeble-minded in our scriptures, and I think kind of denotes that the mind is not functioning as well as it could. Jesus talked in Matthew 25 about he was sick and in prison, and you visited me not. And there he lists a whole bunch of things where brethren need to be attentive to the needs of other brethren, the personal needs, such as visiting somebody that's sick, or somebody that's in prison, or somebody that doesn't have that's homeless, somebody doesn't have enough to wear or enough to eat. And Jesus talks about looking at and addressing, visiting means looking to the needs of those individuals that are a little different than the rest of individuals and that don't have some of the basic things going for them. I'm in Romans, the 15th chapter now in verse 2, and I want to read a little bit in this passage, and we'll kind of get going on the topic this evening. But in Romans 15, verse 1 and 2, he says here, let each one of us please his neighbor for that which is good unto edifying, for Christ also pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproach thee fell upon me. And what he says here is that we need to work with each other to build each other up. I don't know of a passage that excludes certain groups of people from going to heaven. I do know that the Bible says the gospel is for all. And when it is for all, we are going to spread the gospel dragnet, and with that we are going to get all kinds of things that people bring with them. Sometimes people grow up in the church and they have various issues that they have to deal with. But very often, folks that are coming in from out in the world, they come in with their baggage. And that baggage sometimes is mental health and addiction kinds of issues. I'm going to talk just briefly on addictions this weekend, but focus mostly on mental illness. And really, I prefer the topic mental health. Illness talks about sick people. I'd like to talk about well people, but we'll call it mental illness for now. Now, there are Bible examples of people that had some mental illnesses. And I want to say in the very beginning that some mental illness, and listen to me carefully, some mental illness is a result of something that God has brought into a person's life. Now, I want to go and show that to you in the book of Daniel. For in Daniel, the 4th chapter, I didn't say all mental illness, but some. In the book of Daniel, we have a case of a psychotic disorder. And we'll define what psychotic is in just a moment. This is a king that had boanthropy, which is a delusional state where a human being thinks that they're a cow. That's what he thought. This is probably the very kind of thing that we end up with the werewolf, people who think they're wolves. This is the same kind of a disorder that comes here. Well, the king is King Nebuchadnezzar. And you recall the story in Daniel, the 4th chapter, where he thought he was so high and mighty, and God said, I'm going to teach you a lesson. 7 times will pass over, and you will go out and you will eat grass as the beast of the field, and you'll be in the midst until 7 times pass over, and you come to know that the Most High rules in the kingdoms of men and gives them to whomsoever he will. Now, as we read down in that, what we find is that Nebuchadnezzar did that. He actually went out and he thought he had psychotic delusions. He had hallucinations about being an animal. But the amazing truth of this is in verse 34 in his psychotic delusion, he would stay there until until his reasoning returned. And he came to realize that God rules in the kingdoms of men and gives them to whomsoever he pleases. In Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 28, there, among other things, it talks here about a mental disorder or mental disorders that are classified as madness. I want to turn there and read that with you. And let's, if you don't have a Bible, please get one. We're going to look at several verses tonight. But in Deuteronomy 28 and verse 28, Jehovah will smite thee with boils of Egypt, and with the emrods, and with the scurvy, and with the itch, whereof thou canst not be healed. Now in this, you will recognize Deuteronomy chapter 28 as the beginning of the chapters of the blessings and cursings that would come upon Israel. And if you'll look over at verse 15 of chapter 28, what he says is that when you go in the land, the first part says, if you obey me, I'll give you all the wonderful blessings. But if you disobey me, then God says, I will bring some things on you that will cause a curse in your life. Now, when I look at this, I see the word emrod here, and the word emrod is the word tumors. And that word is actually, pardon me for being gross, but is actually the word that we get hemorrhoids from. And so God says, I'm going to strike you with some illnesses if you depart from me. So I cannot get away from the fact that some mental illnesses may be a visitation from God. At least they were in the Old Testament. In 1 Samuel, the fifth chapter, verses 9 and 10, we read about the Israelites when they took the Ark of the Philistines, when they took the Ark of the Covenant, 1 Samuel 5, 9 and 10, and when they took that Ark of the Covenant away from where it was supposed to be, what it says is God struck them with tumors. That word tumors is our same word, which is the word for hemorrhoid. Now, hemorrhoid is not a mental illness, but it can make you feel crazy. But what I'm showing is that some things are from God. Now, King Saul, for instance, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 14 through 17, you remember that King Saul had violated God's word with the bringing back of King Agag and the spoils and so forth. And God, it says in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 14 through 17, that as a result of what Samuel did, or what Saul did, that God visited him with an evil spirit. And I want to go to 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 9 and 10 on this one. And okay, that's the one. I'm sorry, that's the one we already talked about. But the text I'm looking for is where it says that God had caused an evil spirit to come upon Saul, and it vexed him. And what we also find is how this got soothed is by David coming over and playing his harp music. Because his harp music soothed his soul, is what the text says. And so we learn in this that sometimes, and we have at least three examples here, of sometimes that calamity comes upon an individual because of a violation of God's will. Now, when I say sometimes, that's not always, and that probably is not often, but I do have to say that in passing. Sometimes what happens in the terms of mental illness is people come to see folks like me, and I'm going to deal with this part in the first part of the lesson. They come to see people like me, and what's happened is sin has taken its natural course. That is, someone has done something to them. Someone that is connected with them has done something that has brought distress. A home may have ended because of some kinds of distress, and the children and grandchildren may be affected because of that. Sometimes sin brings great distress. That's the natural course of sin. I believe that's why God tells us to stay away from some things. So sometimes when people come and seek mental health, it's because of mental health counseling. It is due to maybe a husband and wife not acting like husbands and wives are supposed to. And so they go to marital therapy to dig into the detail and see if they can figure out what's going on so they can hold their marriage together. Sometimes children have been disobedient to parents, And as a result of that, have brought a Pandora's box of issues into their lives, and now they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. A person goes out and starts teasing around with drugs or chemicals, and then the drugs get hold on them, and they come to see people like me. What is that all about? That's not about people who necessarily have some kind of disease or some kind of a thing that dropped on them that is organic in nature. But instead, we have the results of sin that bring distress into people's lives, and they come to folks like me to try to help them untangle it. And hopefully I'm able to do that in many cases. But what I want to note tonight is that sometimes sin finds us out. I see this especially when we deal with families of divorce. I wondered for the longest time why the Old Testament would say when God would bring something upon a people, he said, I would visit the sins of the fathers upon the third and the fourth generation. And I used to read that and wonder, well, what did the third and fourth generation do to cause you to visit their sins upon the third and fourth generation? They're not the ones that sinned. Two generations back did. But then I came to realize what this means. When people make bad decisions in their life, it affects not only that generation, it affects the next one and the next one and the next one. And in the studies that I've done, it takes about four generations to clear a family up from some stupid mistake that somebody made four generations earlier, like going through divorce or like cheating on their family or whatever. The effects of divorce keep giving for age or for time after time. And families that become confused because now instead of having two parents, we have four parents. And in some cases, you have eight parents or more. As you put all the parties together and talk about family reunions and rough times and loyalty in the family and security and all that, the sins of the fathers truly come upon the children. And so we have to be aware, I'm aware of that, as we try to untangle things. People with addiction issues, addiction wreaks havoc in the home. And I work with people trying to help them get their families back together or hold them intact for at least a while. And as I do that, I'm so cognizant of the fact of how evil can destroy people and often brings people to counseling sessions. Those are not necessarily people that I would say are mentally ill, but they are people who come to counseling because they have something that is usually called an adjustment disorder, and it qualifies them for the billing. Insurance companies do awful things to us by having to hang labels on people, but that's another story. I want to suggest as we look at this that sometimes the areas of mental illness are caused by some chemical thing that's going on in a person's body or by genetics. Or by social learning. Sometimes people can learn how to be sick from being around people who are sick. And what I mean by that is that a person can learn, for instance, how a depressed person acts by growing up around depressed people. And what that does is we are social beings and we learn from each other. We tend to mimic each other. So what you're brought up around is going to predict a little bit about how you're going to act, who you're going to imitate. We know that. Have you ever sat with your kid and your kid came home and all of a sudden they got a goofy laugh or a goofy smile that you wonder, where'd that come from? I know when my kids were teenagers, they'd come home and it's like they got a new friend. And I could tell by the way they were acting that somebody was new in their life. They were mimicking somebody else. Same thing is true in terms of families that have dysfunction or people that grow up in families where there is some kind of an illness going on. And now we're ready. This is not demon possession. There sometimes are people that say, well, you know, does this sound like demon possession in the Bible? And the answer is no. This is not demon possession. In the Bible, we read about those that were demon possessed. But and I want to talk a little bit about that. In Matthew, the 8th chapter, verse 28, we read a situation where some demons are there, and they're about to be cast into a herd of swine. And I want you to look here at what these demons are able to do. First thing here is the demons are able to believe. They said, "What do we have to do with thee, thou Son of God? Are you come here to torment us before the time?" Now, I want you to look at several things there. First is, these demons were rational enough to know that there is a God. They were rational. They knew that Jesus was the Son of God. "What have we to do with thee, thou Son of God?" They knew He was the Son of God, and they knew there was a God. And then they also knew there was a time of torment. "Are you come here to torment us before the time?" Now, this is a rational conversation that they're having. And then they also, if as you note in here, that they confess that Jesus is the Son of God. And I use those 4 points sometime to talk about the faith of a demon, and that's there, but the other piece is also there. These demons are thinking very rationally. They were coherent, not very much unlike the schizophrenic person. Schizophrenia has at least 3 or 4 forms, and among these are the catatonic schizophrenic persons who just kind of sit and rock. Actually, the word schizophrenic means split mind. And it comes from the idea that the filters in the brain have quit filtering. And so the brain is being flooded with all kinds of things. Can you imagine if we weren't able to screen out the sounds that are around us? So if we had a baby crying and we have somebody having a conversation here and way back there, you could hear somebody talking and you got cars going by and you're hearing all kinds of things kind of rushing in all at the same time. And then if you add paranoia to it, you'll wonder, are they all talking about you? Because you have trouble filtering it out. That's the schizophrenic mind. The onset of schizophrenia is in the early 20s. That's why sometimes people go away to college and then something happens and usually folks say, well, they snapped while they were in college. No, what they may have snapped, but what more than likely happened is you have the onset of schizophrenia that occurs, the split mind. So usually the person with schizophrenia has incoherent words, or they have sentences that are based on delusions. Went up and checked on one fellow, nicest kind of guy, and I was told, you better check on him, something strange going on. So I went up and knocked on his door. He peeped around the door at me, and he says, "Come on in." So I went in real quick, and his room literally glittered. This man had taken about the last 3 days and took tinfoil and put in all the paint pores in his wall. And he did that, he said, because the people in outer space were spying on him, and he did that to deflect the signals that were coming from their spaceship. And he also told me, he says, "Stay away from the windows, they're looking in." Well, we were on the 4th floor. They'd have to be awful tall to be looking in the windows, or else in some hovercraft. But his mind was in a delusional state. He felt like people were going to come up through the drains in his bathtub and that kind of thing. He was delusional. He was not in his right mind, so to speak. And so that was how his schizophrenia presented. Another gentleman with schizophrenia was sitting watching TV one evening, and a cat appeared in the corner and used the bathroom in his corner. And about that time, a televangelist came on and said, "I killed your mother, and you'll never catch me." And he came and got me and told me, "Come up to my apartment, come to my apartment." And he told me what all he had experienced there. And actually, what he was having is a psychotic break, a delusional moment. And then I came to find out, yes, he was off his medications. And the reason was, is that he wanted to sell his blood down at the plasma center and get $35 so he could go out and buy some cigarettes. Well, we got him back on his drugs and figured out some ways that he could get a little income, hopefully not for cigarettes. But we helped him with that, and as long as he stayed on his medications, he was fine. Fact is, he held a job. He was a painter, and he did a good job painting. But sometimes what will happen is people that need to be on medications will make the statement, "I don't like how those make me feel," and so they get off their medications. And that's one of the worst things they can do, because in the case with schizophrenia, that holds chemicals in place, the neurotransmitters in the brain holds those in place to where the individual is able to function and act act fairly normally. Well, the scriptures make a difference between schizophrenia and disease. And I want to just show you one passage. There are so many. But I'm in Mark, the fourth chapter now. Mark, the fifth chapter, and verses 3 and 4. And actually, I'm jumping all over my thing here. With the demon possession, let me go back there. With the demon possession, when a person had demons, in Matthew 8:32, it says that they were very fierce. And then in Mark 5:3-4, it says that these individuals had chains. They were in chains, and they broke the chains, and nobody could go near them because they could break chains. People who are schizophrenic do not have that kind of superhuman strength. As a matter of fact, most of them are very frail in their appearance. So the question I would like to deal with tonight is first, what it's not, and second, that sometimes things come upon us as a visitor from God or from Satan. Okay, Paul's thorn in the flesh was from Satan. But not all the while are all mental illnesses to be, God's just visiting somebody with a calamity. So I don't want us to get that impression. So let's talk about what is mental illness. The first question I want to ask you is, what is normal? I'd like all the normal people to raise your hand. Before I can talk about abnormal, I have to know what normal is, don't I? Someone said, well, what is normal? And I have this crazy definition. Normal is a composite of everything that is abnormal. Now, how do you like that? Because when I look at what makes a thing abnormal, it's because it spikes. But when it's in range, it's probably normal. And so I kind of go with that. Now, mental health falls into several categories or diagnoses. The first is psychosis. Now, psychosis is a mental disorder that takes a person out of reality. That is, they're delusional. They're not thinking straight. When they talk, it doesn't make sense. So the psychosis fall in there. Usually, there are hallucinations that go with that. They may be auditory. That's very rare that you have command hallucinations. But visual hallucinations are fairly common. People see things that aren't there. Sometimes there's the olfactory hallucination. That's that you smell something that's not there. Occasionally people will say, I smell dead people. Or they smell something. Then there is tactile, which is the touch. And so you can have hallucinations that way as well. And basically what's happening is the screens aren't working right in the brain. There's distortion that comes as the neurotransmitters are firing in the brain. The more common things that bring people to treatment, psychosis is usually treated with some kind of a day center, some kind of a mental health center that does med management, and people come in, check in, get their medications adjusted, so the disorders can remain intact. The other area is, and it's not on here, but it's mental retardation and developmental disorders. And what those are, mental retardation is a person has a lower than average IQ, and so a lot of people say they're a little slow, and that's how they would address that. Developmentally disabled are people that never quite grew up. These are people that maybe have to wear the helmets, they bang their head against the wall, maybe they're scratching at themselves all the time. Developmental disorders, these are people that there's something that didn't develop right, and so they have the developmental disorders. But other disorders have to do with neurosis. That's neurotic people. Neurotic people, neurosis is usually people are reality-based, but there's something that's out of order in their life. And among these are going to be the phobias and the anxieties, and a few other things we'll talk about. For instance, people have panic attacks. You ever have a panic attack or know somebody that did? And what they will describe is, I felt like something was standing on my chest. I thought I was having a heart attack. I felt like I was out here. My body was over there. I broke out in prickly sweat. I felt all closed in. I felt like I just wanted to run and scream, and so forth. Sometimes folks have those in church services. There's a place not too far away. Well, actually it is. I drove from there today. And a person that had one of the panic attacks during a church service. And the brethren didn't quite know what to do about it. We'll talk a little bit about more about that in a minute. But these happen, panic attacks. Then also in this category are such things as agoraphobia. Now, some people think agoraphobia is fear of a crowd, but that's not really what agoraphobia is. Agoraphobia is fear that a person will have a panic attack in a crowd. And so it's a little different there. And so they avoid crowds. They don't want to be around people. Sometimes we have those people that don't want to come to church services. Sometimes it is due to some true issue that needs to be addressed. Social anxiety disorder is also one of the neuroses. And anybody that's ever tried to do public speaking knows what that is. It's when your knees knock and your voice quivers and you're scared to death, you're afraid what folks are thinking about you. I once dated a young lady that was a cheap date because she didn't like people to watch her eating. She had a social phobia, social anxiety phobia. And I kind of went with her a while because she didn't cost much. And I got to eat and she got to watch me eat. Anyway, there are other things like social phobias or specific phobias that are some unrealistic fear of something. It may be fear of heights. It may be fear of just about anything. One of the ones that we're seeing very common now is post-traumatic stress syndrome. People who have been through some kind of a trauma, be it a car accident, a bank robbery, or being robbed on the street or taken advantage of somehow, a rape would certainly fall in there. But we're seeing this very much with some of our military people who are coming back from overseas, and for some of those who have been in the military. And we see this a lot. And basically what this is characterized, it used to be called shell shock back during some of the earlier wars. But it occurs when a person is exposed to a traumatic event that causes them extreme stress. Generally, there are flashbacks, there are nightmares, there are unexplained feelings of anger and rage, irritability and emotional numbness, distancing sometimes from people that you should care about or be expected to care about, and the flashbacks. And these things are happening to many people it scares people to death when these things happen. It scares them. For instance, the soldier who's out in public and starts reaching for his weapon, and then he's looking out, and the people that he sees are not who they are. They appear to be someone, a flashback from a traumatic event during a wartime or an event. A bank teller who's been robbed sometimes will have flashbacks that people are coming in with guns or kind of getting suspicious and getting attacks and all that kind of thing going on. There is some real treatment for this. And actually, people don't have to live in this kind of misery. The treatment of preference right now, the evidence-based practice, is called exposure therapy, where the individual actually works with the therapist works with the individual to go back and to kind of unpack what has gone on during that. And often what's happened is there is some block thing that this business of whatever they went through isn't finished, and it's kind of stuck. It's like having something stuck in your tape player, and your tape just keeps going back to the same spot. And so that's post-traumatic stress. There are also, in neuroses, there are the obsessive-compulsive disorders. These are the people that go back home four times to see if they left the iron on, or go back, ride by the house to see if the garage door was left up, and they may ride back two or three times. They're second-guessing themselves. kind of unsure of themselves. And they're, what their mind's doing is like on a circular tape that just keeps replaying and so forth. If you want to see that in action, Jack Nicholson did an excellent portrayal in a movie called As Good As It Gets. And you'll see what obsessive compulsive disorder looks like, or at least how it's depicted there. Then there's general anxiety disorders. This is not just occasional worrying, but this is anxiety and worry that that results in fatigue and nausea and muscle tension, restlessness, and problems concentrating. Then we have the next is the mood disorders. And the mood disorders, among those is bipolar disorder. Okay. Bipolar disorder. By bipolar, this used to be called manic depressive disorder. And essentially it's characterized by extreme highs, sometimes even beyond reality to psychosis, and extreme lows to where the person doesn't want to even get out of bed. During the extreme manic phase, that's when the person maybe will act out, whether it be compulsive shopping, whether it be compulsive interest in sexual activity outside the normal range of what the Bible would tell us, then followed by a fall where the person goes into a deep depression and doesn't even want to get out of bed, or may even go into suicidal disorder. And metabolism is affected, eating, sleeping is affected. With the addictive disorders, I think we can flip one up. With the addictive disorders, they have the ability. The chemicals that are inserted in the brain have the ability to mimic any of the mental health illnesses, and here's why, and why it's hard to detect. Is this a mental disorder, or is this an addictive disorder? The reason it's hard to tell is because there's only a certain number of ways you can go when you insert chemicals into your system that don't belong there. You can either go high, or you can go low, or you can go sideways, which would be psychotic. That's the only three directions you can go. And often what will happen is people will be on some particular chemical, and they'll look like and act like that something else is wrong with them. In terms of a mental disorder. So a lot of times, the mental health disorders are misdiagnosed because there is an addiction issue that's there playing with it. Now, when they're misdiagnosed, they're also mistreated with medications for something that is not what they have when they have an addictive disorder. Now, I want to talk a moment about the personality disorders. I'm going to pull some verses in on this. But what I believe that we see a lot of times in our congregations is the personality disorders coming out to play. Does anyone ever know the name Winnie the Pooh? Anyone ever heard of Winnie the Pooh? Okay. All right, good. Winnie the Pooh is based on the personality disorders. Christopher Robin is the therapist. And all of the characters in there have one of the seven personality disorders. We have Eeyore. And what's his problem? He's depressed. He's got gloom and doom. We got Tigger. What's his problem? He's manic. He's bouncing all over the place. And we could talk about Piglet, who's a dependent personality, or about the others. But that whole thing is a satire on the personality disorders. Now, you've seen these folks. They live in amongst us, sometimes in our congregations, but certainly in our workplaces. Anybody know any drama queens or drama kings? Yeah? All right. And that's called a borderline personality disorder. These are people who thrive on chaos. When I worked in an inpatient psych unit, I used to ask the question, because we would have a unit that was pretty much under control. We get a new admission, and a couple of days later, the unit was rocking and rolling and about to go off, and it's like, what's going on here? And I soon learned that I could step into a unit and just kind of put my hands behind my back and just watch And what I could see is there's a borderline personality at work here. This was the person that came in. It's the quiet one that you would least suspect that's setting the other ones up. Now, you get that going in a congregation. Has anybody been in a congregation where that's gone on? Is you get someone in and kind of stirs, they're stirring the pot. They're kind of getting this one against that one. Gossip will do that. Or you get somebody that brings a false teaching in or whatever, and you get a congregation that's just kind of rocking and rolling. Folks that don't normally act that way are acting that way. It's like, what's going on? Well, you probably got a borderline amongst you. Remember Miss Piggy? Okay. Narcissistic personality. It's all about me. You know anybody like that? Now, the antisocial personality disorder, these are the folks that you want to watch for, because these are people that appear not to have any conscience. These are the con men and women. These are the folks that will come in and look you in the eye and tell you one thing when it's not true. And these are the folks that will be real nice, but be careful, because they swing exactly the opposite direction with being real mean. They will do what it takes to get what they want, and they really don't care who they walk on to do that. That's your antisocial personality. The schizotypal disorder is a person that we would probably call eccentric, or just they're okay. They're talking and making sense. They seem to be in reality, but they're just unusual, and we would call them probably eccentric. Anybody know of anybody that's into the theater? The histrionic people, histrionic personality disorder, are folks that will always be putting on a show, always acting out. These are the ones. I was at a funeral one time, and there was a lady that fainted. She fainted two or three times, actually, at the same funeral. And there wasn't anything wrong with her. The last time she went down, she had a hat on. And last time she went down, she reached for her hat. People that pass out don't reach for their hat. She was histrionic. She's putting on a show. And then the ones that we really have some trouble with sometime is the ones that are like the little puppy dog, that they will follow you everywhere you go. They will nip at your heels. They will call you at inopportune times. They just are dependent on you. And that's called dependent personality disorder. What's really going on? And I suggest to you what's going on is that there is either something they have socially learned and it's working for them as a survival technique. There is something genetically going on to where the person really can't help what's going on, and that's the person who's going to need some medication. And sometimes there are true chemical imbalances that will respond to medication. Medications are needed sometime, but not all the time. I want to talk a little bit more about that as we progress this week. And I want to say something that you're going to hear me say several times. A pill is not a skill. A pill is not a skill. A person may need to take medications to get them there until you can talk them there. For instance, a person that's so depressed they want to kill themselves may need a mood elevator to get them there until we can deal with why they want to kill themselves. You got to keep them alive. But a pill is not a skill. And so the answer to life's problems is not found in a bottle. The answer to life's problems is found in relationship with Jesus. And if a person needs some kind of a chemical, then that needs to be for a legitimate issue, not just because someone has decided to self-medicate. I want to say something about that. Many of our brethren are self-prescribers. You know, they have prescriptions, and they're in their cabinets, but often what they're doing is they're abusing their medications. Sometimes I was like, how many of those did you take? Oh, I took four. How many were you supposed to take? One. Why'd you take four? Well, one didn't work, so I figured if one didn't work right, I'd take four, and four would work. Talked to one of our brethren who had 16 medications, and what he didn't realize is he'd been doc shopping. And And he came and talked to me. He said, you know, I don't know what's going on with me. I can't sleep at night, and then I can't wake up in the morning. I feel like I'm flying part of the time and can't hardly drag the next minute. I don't know what's going on with me. So I asked, I said, what medications are you taking? Well, he was taking 16 different medications. I said, why are you taking all those? Well, they were prescribed. Who prescribed them? And it turns out that this whole litany of doctors was prescribing these, and some of these were mood elevators that were being prescribed PRN. That means as needed. Who decides when they're needed? This guy was deciding when he needed them, and he was bouncing all over the map. And he couldn't figure what was wrong with him because all of his medications were prescription. Well, so I asked the question, have you run those by the pharmacist or by your doctor? Does your doctor know that you're taking all these? Well, no. Does one doctor know you're taking all these? No. They'd been prescribing on top of each other and very likely didn't. Anyway, we got him straightened out. It turned out he didn't really need any pills at all. So he ended up getting off all of them because one was countering the other. We got to be careful with medications. Now, if you are prescribed a medication for a specific disorder, then you need to take that. I'm not telling you not to take your meds, but we do need to take our medications. Now, I have talked way too much off of the subject of the Bible tonight, but this is really biblically related because these are things we deal with in our congregations. I want to talk for a moment about some of the issues that are faced by some of our members that have mental health and addiction disorders. Do you realize how much stigma is out there in terms of people that have mental health issues? Turn on your TV, and what you'll hear is, there was a gunman went into McDonald's today. He has a history of mental illness, and he shot up the place. And then people start thinking, people with mental illness go in McDonald's and shoot up the place. The stereotype. Watch them on TV and see how they're stereotyped as being odd and different and away from the rest of us. The news and the media do a great job. Comedians do a job of making fun of people. In terms of accountability, sometimes congregations will ask the question, what's the church to do when we have someone that has a mental disorder? And I ask the question, well, did you think they were accountable enough that you baptized them? And they say, well, yeah, we didn't want to make any mistakes there. Then you accepted them as members. And that means that they have obligations as members, the way I understand it. And if nothing else, if someone is being unfaithful and they want to blame their mental illness on their unfaithfulness or on their going out and playing the neighborhood and doing whatever they want to do, that brings reproach on the church. And the church at least needs to mark those individuals as no longer a part of the congregation. If you accept them in, then you need to do what it takes to address that issue. That's usually my answer. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Bible. I want to look at John, the 11th chapter, just a moment. And I want to talk about something here that, you remember the scene here where Lazarus has died and Jesus comes over after the death, and Lazarus has already been put in the tomb. And in this particular passage, I want you to notice something. He's been in the tomb for 4 days. And you remember Jesus is with Mary and Martha, and then he goes out to the tomb, and you remember the passage, Jesus wept and all that. And what it tells us here is that Jesus, as he gets ready to raise Lazarus, does something interesting. I want you to look at this real closely. What it says is he told the people to remove the stone. That's significant. Take away the rock. Why is that significant? Because Jesus didn't do it. Take off the grave clothes. Why is that significant? Because Jesus didn't do it. What did he do? He did what they couldn't do for themselves. Now, how is that significant? This is the point I want us to get. Jesus is not going to do for us what we can do for ourselves. but he will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. Do you see that? Now let me take that one step further. Sometimes we help make sick people sicker. We help make people with mental disorders. We help make them sicker by tending to them, by doing everything for them, by virtually making them helpless or dependent. And I use this verse to say that. Don't you even start to do for the other person what they can do for themselves. What you do is what they can't do for themselves. Now, I can go to Galatians 5 with that as well. And there it says that we are to bear, I'm sorry, it's chapter 6, that we are to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. But you drop down a couple of verses and it says, each man shall bear his own burden. Well, what's that about? We bear each other's burdens, yet we're supposed to bear our own burden. What's that? Two words. The one word is the word for a heavy load. And the other is the word for something that will bear us down to where it almost breaks your back. On that, the words are baros and portion. And on that, what it simply says is that whatever hand we get dealt in life, we need to deal with that. But there is a time that we need other people to help us deal with it. And that is when we're not able to handle that load by ourselves. And that's where we reach out to each other, or where others reach out to us. I see that when we have people in a congregation that have some of these disorders we've talked about tonight. And I want to talk about the caretakers. Sometimes the caretakers need more help than the person they're taking care of, because they get tired and they get worn out. And they sometimes can do things that are out of character. I don't know how many times I've had people say, you know, well, they're abusing me. And what they mean is that people are just worn down to their last nerve, the caretakers, and what they need is somebody to give them a little bit of relief. That's something that we as Christians can do as we bear one another's burdens. We can go in and say, listen, why don't you take off? I'll sit with them, or I'll do whatever needs to be done here. And why don't you take off and go do something for yourself? We need people that will step up and offer to help in times like that. We also need, when people have these disorders, to see the person beyond their diagnoses. A person is not their diagnosis. They are a person. Talked to one lady as I was preparing this lesson and said, what do you want me to tell people? And she spoke to me in her broken voice and she says, tell them I'm a person. And that's right. A person first. Anybody here doesn't have anything wrong with them? Okay. I got one. Doesn't have anything wrong with them. I just suggest that what we need to do is bear each other's burdens. And there's sometimes that we need to just understand and to be there. And I find it kind of interesting. I kind of hang out on the sidelines of a crowd unless I'm the center of attention. And I hang on the sidelines, but I do that for a reason. And the reason I do is because there's a lot of folks that are getting left out of the howdy-dos. And so I hang out and I try to find someone that's not engaged in conversation. It may be somebody's got a social phobia. It may be somebody that just is kind of nervous because they're in a place for the first time. Maybe somebody's got something else going on with, I don't know. Or maybe somebody that folks are kind of afraid of and don't know how to talk to. Those folks need folks to talk to them also. And if the gospel is for all, and if we're supposed to salute one another with a holy kiss, I think that means all of us. And so we speak to people, and we talk to people, and try to get in folks' world. I used to be one that when I would pass someone with a disorder or something going on that I didn't understand, I would usually, and shamedly I would say this, I would usually avoid them. And I avoided them because I didn't understand what was going on with them. But the more I've talked to folks that have something going on with them, the more I realize they're just a person. You know who's going to preach for me this Sunday morning? It's a gentleman that has schizophrenia. And he's going to preach for me Sunday morning. And he's going to do a really good job. Because when he's on his medications, his schizophrenia doesn't come out to play. See, we're not going to avoid him simply because he has a diagnosis. He is not his diagnosis. But we're going to work with him, find out what his talents are that he can do, and he does a pretty good job. Now, if he comes in speaking in church songs, I know he didn't take his medications. So I'll take him aside, and I'll ask him, did you take your meds? And he'll usually say no when he's talking to me like that. And so we take care of that. So he goes home, gets his medications, and we see him the next time. But I also want to note that those that have the mental disorders, sometimes we don't realize that if they're not watching for themselves, if they're not really accountable part of the time, then some of us need to watch for them, kind of just be alert. And the reason is that persons with these disorders are at risk for higher risk for heart illness that is largely preventable. They're at greater risk for obesity, for diabetes, for tobacco use, for high blood pressure, and for the impact that antipsychotic medications have on those things. A person who is paranoid is probably not going to tell their doctor how they're feeling. And so we may need to be the spokesperson to the doctor. James 5:16 talks about us confessing our faults one to another, and that what that may be is whoever the trusted person is that is the caregiver, the caretaker, needs to find out about what's going on with the person and tell the right people. Also, people with these disorders are often very lonely because they get left out of a lot of things. They don't get invited to a lot of things, and that is not as it should be. But in their loneliness, often what will happen is they will get exploited. Every month when the checks come in on the 1st and the 15th of the month in Indiana, I have to watch for folks that are going to use our people that have mental disorders. And what they will usually do is if you got money, you got friends. And they'll crowd in, they'll help you spend your money, and then your rent's gone, everything's gone. You basically bought what you thought were friends, but they actually used you. And then they're also at very high risk for substance abuse. Turn, if you will, to Ephesians 5:28-29. And here it says, in talking about Christ and the church and the husband's relationship to the wife, what it says is a principle. For no man ever yet hated his own body, but nourishes it and cherishes it just like Christ does the church. Now that verse tells me that the natural order of things is that we nourish and cherish our bodies. That is, we take care of ourselves, we feed ourselves properly, and we take care of ourselves. Often people that have some of these disorders don't take care of themselves. And so we have to ask the question, when's the last time you had a good meal? What did you eat? And if you're eating Cheez-Its for a month, you're probably not going to be in the best health. When a person says, oh, I'm eating, well, what are you eating? And so forth. So you really need to check with them. So nourishing and cherishing our own body, that's part of what we do. Some people may need some help, and we may need to check in with them on that. I talked to one person that had been eating Spam for a month. I can't imagine that. But that was their meal for a month. Romans 12:1-2 is another passage about our body and about optimizing our potential as Christians. And what it says there is that we are to present our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is our reasonable service. And it goes on to talk about being transformed. But there it says that our bodies are to be as a living sacrifice. In other words, what we need to do is to optimize our body's potential, and all of our potentials may vary, but to optimize our body to be able to f- fulfill its potential as a living sacrifice to God. There was one lady that in place where I preached that she asked, "What can I do for the church?" And she was kind of limited in what she's able to do. She was mobile, but she was real limited in her mental, her cognitive abilities. And so what I suggested to her is, well, why don't you look around and see what you think you might be able to do? Here's a few ideas. And she settled on one. And what she said is, you know what? I can find out when people's birthdays are and send them a card. And she started doing that. And then a little later on, she figured out that when we make the announcements and talk about who all's sick, well, I can send people a get well card. And she started doing that. And people remembered her. And I wonder sometimes in the kingdom of God, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus brought a little child and said, except we humble ourselves and become as little children, we will not be able to enter the kingdom of heaven. I just think that's beautiful that here's a lady who on the judgment day, I believe the statement will likely be made, she has done what she could. There are many modern-day Dorcases around in our congregations. There are some that may not have all the skills and abilities as others. Some have one talent, and some have many. But whatever talent we have, God expects us to use it. When I work with vocational rehabilitation, and people come in, sometimes they're strapped to boards, and their bodies are twisted and contorted, and they can't speak very well, difficult to understand. And I worked with a gentleman that told me, he said, "Art, everybody can do something." And I looked at this guy and I said, I want you to show me what he can do. You know what he did? They figured out with his hand strapped down, he could move his fingers. And so they moved him up to the swing set parts, the nuts and the bolts. And this man counted out the nuts and the bolts and put them in a bag to go to a swing set that might be in your backyard. Everybody can do something. I learned that. Regardless of what the limits are, everybody can do something. Now, those that have some of the disorders we've talked about often have a lot of time on their hand. And the question is, what can they do in the kingdom of God? And they can do something. If they can't figure it out, some of us can. And so let's all be about our Father's business, regardless of whether we're one talent or whether we're five talents or whatever our talents are. So what do we learn from all this? Well, we learned that there's a whole lot in this introductory lesson. Let me say just a word. Often congregations don't understand the mental health systems that are available in their community. And I want to talk just a moment about that. Well, what do we do? Where do we refer? I use the illustration. Suppose I was to pull up in front of the hospital down here and zip in the emergency lane and pull up to the emergency room and honk my horn, and everybody comes running out with a stretcher and they said, what's going on? What can we do? I need an oil change. Now, if they didn't bring the jacket to take me up to the ninth floor, what they would do is say something like this. Well, sir, we don't do that here. And I could say, well, what are you, anti-oil change? And they'd say, no, we just don't do that here. That's not our scope. And I want to suggest to you that we may need to look at that illustration in terms of the church. Sometimes we try to be all things to all people. We try to be marriage counselors. We try to be therapists. We try to be, you know, we need to know where our limits are and where the boundaries that we have for the church. The church is a soul-saving institution. It has a high mission of evangelism, edification, and limited benevolence. And in the church, what we need to do is not stray from the church's mission to become a social institution that is trying to take care of all the social needs and the dysfunctional needs of people. When people have a sin problem, that's what we do. And we can deal with that. And some of the things we talked about tonight certainly cross over in sin. But we need to remember that we can't do everything. And we need to be learn to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Sometimes in our efforts to help people, we try to rescue them. And I'll tell you a story of a gentleman. One night there was a drug addict that had been to service a couple of times that came and knocked on the door of the preacher. This preacher lived 25 minutes from the hospital across the black country, the dark country. And this woman knocked and says, "I'm ready to get treatment. Would you take me to the hospital?" He put her in his car, and they drove 25 miles, just him and this woman, in a drug state of mind across the middle. Folks, we got to watch what we do. That is very inappropriate. Police will do that. Somebody wants help, they'll take them. Or call the ambulance, they'll take them. But we've got to be very careful about making ourselves too vulnerable. I am tired of hearing people leave the faith because they exercise poor judgment trying to rescue somebody. Is anybody else tired of that? We need, in our reaching out to help others, to remember where the boundaries are and what proper discretion is. Well, I've talked way too long tonight. I promise you the other lessons will not be this long. But what I want you to look at is the last, there's two more. And this is a poem, and I'm going to read it in its entirety, and part of it is on these slides. "You ask me what I want in those times," and this was written by a person with a mental disorder. I asked them to write this so that I could share it. "You ask me what I want in those times when you attempt to be the kind of helper who does not show me contempt for the dreams and aspirations that I hold buried deep down inside, covered by the illness that I no longer try to hide. Others do not talk of wants. They lecture me about my needs. Then they appear to be upset when their plan for me doesn't succeed. I know some truly think that they have my best interest at heart when they invalidate my vision and pick my dreams apart. I want you to know that my illness cannot reveal the wonder that is in me. It captures not my essence, my yearning to be free from haunting voices and disjointed thoughts nagging in my brain, free to be a person whom illness cannot define or try to explain. I want a home where I can feel at ease, not pressured to conform, where I can do the things I feel like versus needing to perform. The tasks and goals the staff decides everyone should do, like cooking meals for groups of 12 or even being in bed by 11. I want to talk to others without seeing an ashen look upon their face when they learn that I'm not like them because of my disorder and have to get out of this place. I want a job where I can fit in and make a decent wage. I want to feel the warmth of a friend who can melt away my rage. I want the things you want to be respected and affirmed. I want the things you want to have my personhood confirmed. I want the things you want to laugh and to belong, to feel the sun on my face and to sing a joyful song. I want others to know that I didn't choose to be this way. And sometimes I'm not so sure that I can even go on another day. I want to feel needed, to break out of my patient role. And if you hear and feel my words, I need you to help me to reach my goal." Does that sound like somebody wrote that knew what they were talking about? I'm amazed at the talent that lurks underneath the diagnoses. Here's what I want you to know. Whoever you are, God doesn't want you to be lonely. Whoever you are, God doesn't want people to be scared by you. Whoever you are, try to live your life in balance and do the very best you can with the talents and the skills you have while recognizing those you don't have. And I want you to know God loves you. God loves you. Do you ever think how special you are? Sometimes we talk to people and they get so depressed and they say, well, you know, I just don't have anything to offer. I'm just in everybody's way. And I remind them, your father owns the world. Your big brother is the king. You're in a royal family. You're in a priesthood. You're a saint. And you have been saved to reach out and help save others. Now, there's a congregation in another state on the other side of the one I live on. And I was asked to come and present this series of lessons. And I had an entire mental health center came to the assembly that morning. What I was soon to learn is that half of them already came to all the assemblies. And I was so impressed at the warmth of the brethren toward those individuals, speaking to them, sharing with them. But you know what? How those folks came to be there? Two of them started, and they did what everybody else needs to do. They invited their friends, and they came. And so it is when the gospel call goes out that our friends and our neighbors come. They come from the highways, the hedges. They come from the bar rooms. They come from the streets. They come from broken homes. And they come to hear the common message. A Savior has come to the world. And He came to save you. The gospel's for all, not just for those who have privilege. That's our message tonight, and it's the longest one of all of these, so come back, and we'll talk some more. Maybe there's someone here tonight that needs to respond to the message of the gospel. And sometimes in an audience like this, we have people that just simply want to have folks pray for them. And we're going to sing an invitation song, and it's designed to encourage you. We haven't particularly talked about what to do to be saved tonight, but just very briefly, we need to hear the gospel. We need to believe it with all of our heart, to repent of our sins and confess our faith in Jesus as the Son of God, and then to be immersed in water for the remission of our sins, and then to live faithfully into death. If we can help you to respond to the gospel call, or if you have need for some special prayers tonight, if you have need for anything this evening, then we ask you to come to the front while we stand and sing.